The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Bonjour, hi, Canada, Hugh Hewitt inside the ReliefFactor.com studio in Washington, D.C. I'm so glad to have you with me live this morning. Yesterday, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken finally sat down and dodged most questions, but we learned that he left thousands and thousands of Americans behind. They hold green cards. They are legal permanent residents. You know LPRs. I'm hoping LPRs will call me today. Open up the phones, Ben. I only want to talk to people who have green cards. 1-800-520-1234. The administration has been hiding this fact. They have been shielding this from people's view, that we left thousands and thousands of legal permanent residents of the United States in Taliban control. Now, a green card means you have, there are about, I believe, 14 million green card holders in the United States. It means you've made your home here forever. My son's in-laws, mother-in-law and father-in-law, were green card holders for, I don't know, 10, 12, 15 years, and they became American citizens. That's what you do. And so they are Americans. Once you get that, you have the right to return at any time. You bring your green card along with your original passport. If you're from Canada, you know, I don't know who these people are. Sure, some of them are certainly dual citizens with Afghanistan, or they're not dual citizens, they have an American passport. There are Afghans who have returned. There are probably a lot of people who work with the United States there. But for whatever reason, it was not followed up on. It will be by the Senate today. They've got to ask, who are these people? Where are they? What is happening to them? Here's the exchange with Representative Lee Zeldin, who did a great job, probably the best job of any of the Republicans yesterday, in pressing Secretary of State Blinken. Let's play cut number one.
My colleagues claimed earlier in this hearing that the last administration's agreement with the Taliban was unconditional. That was false. In fact, you, sir, actually started to outline some of those conditions and you were stopped. To recap, Mr. Secretary, the last administration's agreement with the Taliban was conditions-based, correct?
The conditions that you refer to included a commitment not to allow Afghanistan to harbor outwardly directed terrorists. Let me just be clear, though, in response to your question.
You know, I know you listed it earlier, but the question is, it was a conditions-based agreement, correct?
Yes, except that those conditions were so loose, particularly with regard to the commitments it made.
You can criticize if you know you want, Mr. Secretary. I just wanted you to answer the question. Next, are you aware that President Biden says in the transcript of his George Stephanopoulos interview that he would have withdrawn from Afghanistan regardless of that prior agreement?
Yes, that's right. But not necessarily in the time, place, and manner that we did, which was imposed upon us by that agreement.
On July 8th, as Congressman Issa referred to earlier in this hearing, President Biden said, quote, the likelihood that there's going to be the Taliban overrunning everything and owning the whole country is highly unlikely. That is a very different prediction than what the U.S. intelligence community actually was saying. Mr. Secretary, where did the president get the highly unlikely intelligence estimate from?
As the intelligence community has actually said, including in the days leading up to the Taliban takeover, they were not, and no one was predicting, the rapid collapse of the government and the security forces. Throughout the year, the intelligence community looked at a range of scenarios, worst case to best case, about the durability, resilience of the government and security forces. In the springtime,
the question is, where did the president get highly unlikely from?
Again, based on what the intelligence community was saying and the military, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs has said that no one anticipated that the government or the security forces would collapse in 11 days.
I appreciate that, Mr. Secretary. It would be good, though, if you were giving answers that were consistent with the answers that we were getting behind a closed door briefing that we had with you and others. What is the number of Americans who are in Afghanistan as of the last update you received?
The Congressman, going back to this weekend, we had about 100 American citizens in contact with us who seek to leave Afghanistan. Those are the Americans we're working with.
Do you have an exact number?
I can't give you an exact number. We were talking about this a little bit earlier. It's really a snapshot at any given moment, because what happens is,
I asked you as of the last update you received.
Yeah, as of the last update, it was about 100.
Okay, how many green card holders?
Green card holders is something that we don't track directly. So what we've done is we've solicited people, if they are green card holders, to let us know. I think the best estimates are that there's several thousand green card holders in Afghanistan.
How many SIV applicants?
SIV applicants, those are numbers that we're working on right now as people come out of Afghanistan, some of them in the United States already, others at these transit points. We're collecting all of that information. The overwhelming majority of Afghans who've come out are Afghans who are at risk in one way or another. Some of them will be SIVs applicants. Others will be people who are eligible for refugee visas. Still others will be at risk in some fashion. We are putting all those numbers together, and we should have that in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, I mean, this was fatally flawed, poorly executed. We had the loss of U.S. service members as a result. We should not have been operating off of an arbitrary July 31st deadline. Instead, what we should have done was tell the Taliban that we are going to leave Afghanistan when we're done bringing every last American home, not operating off of some arbitrary date. We shouldn't have collapsed Bagram when we did. We shouldn't have been relying on the Taliban to provide security at the airport. We shouldn't have been allowing billions of dollars worth of U.S. weapons and equipment to get turned over to Afghanistan. The administration should not have been lying and misleading the American public, like when the White House press secretary is standing out there to the press and to the American public and saying that Americans aren't stranded, even though we all know that they are. And I'm concerned that this administration with incompetency is exposing a vulnerability that other countries, like we see North Korea now testing long-range missiles. We see Iran enhancing uranium enrichment. What happens when China and Russia and Hamas and Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, they continue to press forward because we have an administration that doesn't know how to confront an adversary, understanding that they do not respect weakness. They only respect strength.
And that point, I want to say, we are in America Held Hostage 2.0, day 15. There are 100 Americans who have passports in Afghanistan. There are thousands of Americans who are legal permanent residents. Thousands! And we have America Held Hostage 2.0. If you are a legal permanent resident of this country, 1-800-520-1234, would you call and just let the audience know who you are? I mean, I cannot believe we left thousands of green cards, that we closed up shop and went home with thousands of Americans with green cards stranded in the country. Thousands. Thousands. I think Lee Zeldin got to the numbers we were looking for, so I'm not going to criticize him much. But United States senators get Blinken today, and they've got to drill in. Who are these people? What do they do? Where are they? Are they in Kabul, or are they spread around the country? And Blinken's got one of those affectations like President Obama, he said Pakistan. He says Kabul. It's Kabul. How many of them are in Kabul? How many in Herat? How many in Mazar-e-Sharif? The planes that are stranded in Mazar-e-Sharif came up a couple of times. No one followed up. Are they sitting on the planes on the runways? Are they staring at the Marriott, which is probably not working anymore? Representative Ronnie Jackson of Texas did get in a good hit. Cut number 10.
Secretary Blinken, exactly 1 week ago, four of my constituents escaped Afghanistan, the first known to leave the country since your administration abandoned American citizens in Kabul on the 30th of August. Your officials left this young mother and her three children behind. The youngest was 2 years old. The family remained hidden and terrified for 12 long days until my team and a group of brave patriots on the ground facilitated their evacuation. During this time, the State Department did nothing to help this family. Instead, you directed them to go to the Taliban checkpoints repeatedly, where the mother eventually had a pistol placed to her head, and then told them to stay in their homes as the Taliban went door-to-door searching for American citizens and Afghan allies, all while you were vacationing in the Hamptons and your diplomats were safe in Doha. Then miraculously, after their safe arrival, the State Department jumped in to claim full responsibility for what had happened. The response from your team is revolting. It takes credit from the brave patriots who risked their lives to actually bring my constituents home safely.
Good for Ronnie Jackson. That was 1 minute. You can get a lot done in 1 minute. My phone number is 1-800-520-1234. I'm not asking for your opinion on Afghanistan or anything, legal permanent resident. I'm just asking who you are. There are 14 million of you. I hope some of you are listening this morning and awake this early. I would like the American people to know that we left thousands of you behind. You might have a particular reaction. They obviously consider you expendable. Joe Biden, and on this recall day in California, don't forget to get out and vote. But if you can call me, 1-800-520-1234, legal permanent residents can't vote. I know that. But maybe they're driving someone to vote in California to get rid of Gavin Newsom, vote for Larry Elder. But that's today, by the way. I want you to give me a call and let me know. I just want to know, who are you? How long have you been in the country? Let people know who these thousands of Americans are that Joe Biden abandoned in Afghanistan. Stay tuned. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. Icarian Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega. Temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains. Temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains. And you can't do better than that three-week starter pack, $19.95. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Green cards are available, and there are 13 to 14 million of them in the United States for any number of reasons. You can be the family member of an American citizen. You can be a religious worker. You can be an Afghan who worked for the United States anytime for at least a year on the International Security Assistance Mission for a year. You could have gotten your green card that way. You can be an international broadcaster. You can be a member of an international organization. We don't know who those thousands of green card members are, but David Drucker, it made it to your paper, the Washington Examiner, yesterday. The big story of the Blinken hearing was the green card number. Thousands of lawful U.S. residents left in Afghanistan. Were you surprised by that?
No, not necessarily. I mean, I think the larger issue here, or, you know, the issue here is, does the administration know exactly how many are there and who they are? I mean, is it thousands and thousands? Is it the low thousands? The issue is, one, we left them there, but second, do we know who they are?
You know, David, I have to disagree with you. After 3 weeks, 4 weeks of hearing about 100 Americans, then to hear Blinken said, well, we have thousands of green card holders. A, they're Americans. They have legal permanent residence here. Like Dwayne said, his next door neighbor is a Brit who married an American. Adam, the engineer, chief engineer here. His mom's a Canadian, LPR. LPRs are everywhere. I mean, they just left them.
Right, and I think that's the larger issue, Hugh. But I also think it's important that the administration either knows who they left or doesn't know who they left, and are they being candid, especially in these hearings, with what they know and the decisions they made? And one of the things I would like to see out of the Senate today that I didn't really see out of the House yesterday is some really incisive, pointed questions with less grandstanding, so the administration either starts to talk about the decisions that it made and what the situation on the ground is, or just simply reveals that it was as haphazard inside as it looked on the outside, and they don't really know what's going on. But I think it's important for the American public to understand that. It's definitely important for Congress to understand that, to put the proper amount of pressure on the administration and at least be able to talk about this in a real way.
I couldn't agree with you more about the House members. It was haphazard. They hadn't coordinated. It was a classic case of giving a speech instead of asking questions when they could have followed up on who are these thousands who've been left behind? What are their categories? How are they getting out? No one even asked the obvious questions such as, once you got past the Taliban, how did you get past the guard? What list did they have? I mean, there were so many questions they didn't answer because the Republicans were Keystone copping it yesterday. They were not organized. Do you expect the same thing from the senators today?
I don't expect the same thing from the senators, although, look, I've been disappointed before. You know, House members, I like to say, the same way the Israelis used to say about the Palestinians, they never fail to miss an opportunity,
Right.
When it comes to these hearings, with the senators, when you look at the Republicans on the Foreign Relations Committee, you have some real serious, knowledgeable players. You may disagree with, you know, their approach to foreign policy. You may think they're plenty partisan at times, and look, they're politicians, but you've got Marco Rubio, who's steeped in this issue, Mitt Romney, a former Republican presidential nominee who knows a thing or two about foreign policy, Rob Portman, Bill Hagerty, former ambassador to Japan, has done a lot of international business, actually has some decent foreign policy chops for a freshman senator. And so there are, and there are others I'm leaving out, Ted Cruz. So you could see a much more coordinated, productive, and I think the word here is productive, hearing where you have tough, pointed, but relevant questions, where you start to get information out of Antony Blinken, the Secretary of State, or you just realize what they're not willing to talk about or simply don't know. As a side note here, Hugh, I'm kind of surprised, and I really am surprised, that Blinken, and maybe today would be different, but he did not do yesterday's hearing in person. And I just think for a hearing of this magnitude, it's something he should have wanted to do, unless there's just something we don't know that really prevented him from being there in person.
I agree with that. Let me play for you Antony Blinken. He thought this was a big home run, and I think Bill Hagerty will be the one to take this apart. Cut number nine.
We inherited a deadline. We did not inherit a plan.
All right, so they take over on January 20th. Bill Hagerty on this show said the first thing he did when he became ambassador of Japan was review the emergency evacuation plan. Every ambassador is supposed to have an EEP for every American and legal resident in that country in the event of disaster or war, or earthquake or tsunami or something like that. And he spent months getting an EEP ready. Obviously, they own this from January forward. And do you think he even answered the question about the conditions base falling apart when they attacked forward operating base Chapman in March?
Look, I don't think they've addressed any of this properly. When you run for president, you want to be president, you're asking to take ownership over everything. So even if we take Blinken at face value, and even if he's technically correct, and I'm not saying he is, that they didn't inherit a plan, it was the president's job to create a plan and to do this properly.
That's the bottom line. And if you don't have a plan, I don't believe that either. But if you don't have a plan, you got 8 months. They obviously were not bound by the May deadline because the conditions were broken and they didn't leave anyway in May. So it's all incoherent, but I hope the senators drive it home. David M. Drucker on Twitter, thank you. Hour number two of the Hugh Hewitt Show coming up. I want to remind you that our sponsor is andrewandtodd.com. They're with Sierra Pacific. They lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to andrewandtodd.com or call them at 888-1172. Morning, Glory America. Bonjour, hi, Canada. Hear you at Inside the Beltway live on this Tuesday. America held hostage 2.0, day 15. I'm joined by Byron York of the Washington Examiner and Fox News. Good morning, Byron.
Good morning, you.
What did you make of yesterday's Blinken hearing with the House members, especially the Republicans?
Well, the big picture is I was not surprised that Blinken would try to blame Donald Trump for all this. It's really the only option that that the administration has. And we saw it from the very beginning of this. So this idea that the president, President Biden's hands were somehow tied by arrangements that President Trump had made beforehand. So it's kind of preposterous, but I wasn't surprised to see Blinken embrace it.
Here is cut number nine, Antony Blinken's. They thought they were pretty smart with this line. I think it's a disaster for them. Cut number nine.
We inherited a deadline. We did not inherit a plan.
Senator Hagerty, who was ambassador to Japan, told me on this show, Byron, that the first thing he did when he became ambassador was review the Emergency Evacuation Operation Plan, EEOP, and that every ambassador has one. They had 8 months to plan this. 8 months. And obviously the deadline was not binding because the deadline was May. It was conditions-based. The Taliban broke the conditions when they attacked operating base Chapman in March and wounded Americans. That should have come up yesterday. It didn't. Do you think the senators will know how to drill down better than the congressman?
Well, you know, it's funny. As we were on the phone a moment ago, Dwayne said to me, all right, you have Brett Baer's $100 candidate casino, and you're going to ask, you're going to guess which senator will ask the most penetrating questions, will dig the deepest. And I'm looking at the lineup of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. And Hagerty is not a bad guess because he's the least senior. He'll be last. He's the least senior of them, and he's the least hot dogging of them because you do have Senator Cruz there, and you have Senator Rand Paul there. So I'm thinking that Hagerty might not be a bad guess.
Well, my questions, I've given them some pointers. I just posted them on Twitter. Mr. Secretary, how many thousands of green card holders are there? Is it two? Is it five? Is it 25,000? What are their categories? Can you describe them to us, please? Do they have a right to be in the United States? How many of them are United States military veterans? Then I would get into the Marzi Sharif hostage situation, which came up briefly yesterday. Have they been on the plane for 7, 8 days now? Are they at the Marriott next to the hotel?
That's
what is the deal?
That's a great question. We've never even heard physically where they are.
No. And then the final one is, why isn't this a hostage situation? I mean, if you want rhetoric, just ask him the negative question. Now, that's a trial lawyer trick. Why isn't this a hostage situation?
Yeah.
And if someone asks that, they will sound like a fool, because of course it's a hostage situation, Byron York.
You know, and also another thing, and you and I have talked about this in the past few weeks, which is there are two really big questions about the airlift itself. And one is, who did we leave behind? That's what you were just asking. And the other is, who did we bring out? And the State Department has been incredibly squirrely about both of those things. And the other thing, you mentioned the green cards. And as you mentioned green cards, I thought, how did we, on what basis did we give out green cards in Afghanistan? So these are a lot of things to actually learn. But as with the kind of the subtext of your argument this morning is, a senator would actually have to put aside the sermonizing and just start asking questions.
They have to be a trial lawyer. Kurt Schlichter and I have talked about this 1,000 times. No one would win a case if they were represented by a congressman or a senator, because they never, ever develop evidence the right way. But I do think you might get some digging on Mazar-e Sharif and some digging on why is this not a hostage situation. Certainly Ben Sasse tweeted out, thousands? We left behind thousands of green card holders. Now, Dwayne's next-door neighbor is a green card holder. Adam, the engineer, senior producer, his mother is a green card holder. There are probably green card holders in your life, Brian, you don't even know about. My son's in-laws were green card holders till last year, 15 years, an Irish woman and a Canadian man. They became American citizens. So there are green card. There are 14 million green card holders in the United States, and we left behind thousands of them. What did we have a rule at the gate? No green card holders come through.
I mean, that is actually insane because you know, for people concerned about immigration, the question I was asking, who did we bring out, was a real question, and basically it was how did we vet these people, because a lot of them had no documents. And this is just the opposite. This is a green card holder is what's called an LPR, a legal permanent resident. They have a right to be in the United States for the rest of their life. And they also have a right to initiate citizenship proceedings.
And Byron, so, they've been fingerprinted and they have been investigated. If you've got a green card, you've been fingerprinted and you've been vetted. That is the definition of vetted, is a green card holder.
So unless we were irresponsibly giving out green cards at some point in Afghanistan, then these are people who should have had the priority right up there with the U.S. citizens to get out of Afghanistan, and it should have been far above people who didn't have any documents at
100%
all.
100% agree. And that needs to be drilled in. And they are hostages, and we owe them. Now, you get a green card. You qualify for a green card if you serve in the United States military. So I would like to know how many of these are veterans. And then I would like to know how many of them are in touch with the Department of State. It wasn't followed up on. Blinken admitted to thousands of green card holders, but then they just let it lie there. Lee Zeldin was off on his tangent. It was pretty good. Lee Zeldin did better than anyone else. But I've asked green card holders to call the show at 1-800-520-1234 just to explain. I think some of these are going to be military veterans who are contractors with the Afghan Army. I think that's what we're talking about here, Byron. And if we left those guys and those gals, well, shame on us. I mean, there's so much shame to go around here. Did you think Blinken appeared impressive?
No. Has he ever appeared impressive?
No. Chris Wallace flayed him on this show last week. Just flayed him.
He just doesn't have the mien. He doesn't have the demeanor of a man who is really in charge and who knows what he's doing.
Is there, yesterday, John Andrzejczyk released this song. I played it six times. Sean Hannity played it on his radio show. He played it on his TV show last night. Blood on Our Hands, and it's a gut punch. It may be too hard for some people to listen to. Do you think Americans are still outraged about this, or is the Biden attempt to turn the page successful?
Well, this is kind of a hard question to answer because news, you know, happens. And so, the anniversary of September 11th came, and people were thinking about that. And there will be, you know, this big fight over spending, and Democrats really are leaking proposals to raise taxes by incredible amounts. And these are all news events that we have to cover and think about. But that doesn't mean something like the mess in Afghanistan disappears, and it certainly doesn't mean that it disappears when it comes time for accountability, that is, in the next election. So, no, I don't think it disappears. I will say that there's been one thing that's been really kind of striking to me, and I've asked around about this and on Capitol Hill, and nobody really knows the answer. But have you heard many harrowing or even non-harrowing stories from Americans who were rescued in Afghanistan and have been brought out?
About a half dozen. There should be scores and thousands of them.
Because I don't think there's a huge... The reason there isn't is I don't think there's a huge press appetite for this.
Agree.
And I think that they... And I think many people in the press will be very happy to go back to the question of, will Senator Manchin really agree to $3.5 trillion, or will it be half, or, you know...
Agree.
So everybody will be really happy to dive back into the weeds of whether you're going to spend $1.75 trillion or $3.5 trillion, which is an important issue. I'm not saying it's not an important issue, but that will please the Biden administration enormously if they stop.
Oh, they'd rather talk about raising your taxes than 100 Americans held hostage who are citizens and thousands green cards.
Yep.
So they would rather do that. So I hope the first question is, Secretary Blinken, why isn't this a hostage crisis? And if he says they're not asking for money, that'll be a Pinocchio moment. Byron York of the Washington Examiner, Fox News. Thank you, Byron. Follow him at Byron York on Twitter. I'll be right back on the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt for Birch Gold. If you found yourself completely befuddled by events in Afghanistan, alarmed about inflation and otherwise uneasy, well, about everything, about Americans standing in the world, about what comes next, then you're feeling like everybody else is, and uncertainty is usually a time that you want to increase your holdings in gold. When I do that, I do it with Birch Gold. I buy my gold from Birch Gold. You can go to HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, H-U-G-H, to 474747. They will send you free information. If you want to roll over a portion of your IRA or your 401k into physical precious metals, Birch Gold is who to do that with. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, countless five-star reviews, thousands of happy customers. If you're thinking, I got to get some gold, do it with Birch Gold via HughGold.com or text my name, Hugh, to 474747. That's Hugh to 474747 or HughGold.com. Welcome back, America. I'm Hugh Hewitt. I'm going to take a break for a moment from reminding you that the California recall is today. Get out and vote yes on question one for Larry Elder on question two. And I'm going to take a break from covering the ongoing hostage situation in Afghanistan, where thousands of American LPRs have been left behind, to focus on the tax bill that was unveiled yesterday in the House with Alfredo Ortiz of the Job Creators Network, great sponsor of the show. And you want to go to jcnbustour.com, jcnbustour.com, because Alfredo's going on the road to tell small businesses about this. Good morning, Alfredo.
Hey, good morning, Hugh. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to seeing you October 13th in Atlanta at the Atlanta History Center, along with Brian Westbury. Will you have a full list at that point of the tax hikes that the Democrats are proposing?
Well, I hope so, but I don't think they actually ever do stop, though, do they? I mean, somebody's got to fund the not only $3.5 trillion House spending bill, but I think estimates have it up to about $5 to $5.5 trillion, Hugh.
Yesterday was $2 trillion in tax hikes. That's not enough. But of those proposed tax hikes, which do you think is most egregious, doubling the death tax or getting rid of the pass-through, which helps small businesses?
Look, the pass-through is disastrous. Getting rid of that is going to be absolutely disastrous. One of the primary reasons, Hugh, that we believe that we had such a successful economy under President Trump is because of that. We let small businesses grow. We let them thrive. And remember, two-thirds of new job growth is in the hands of small businesses. So when we kill small businesses, we kill our economy. We basically kill our communities. It can't be done. We got to stop it.
Now, you know what I don't understand, Alfredo? They want to return the state and local and property tax exemption, but they want to get rid of stepped-up basis. So that means they're going to give with one hand and take away with the other. It doesn't make a lick of sense. Do you think any of this makes a lick of sense?
No, not at all. I mean, look at what the top rate, for example, in New York City for earners there. It's going to be over 61% is basically what they're going to be given in taxes between federal and state. It's just absolutely ludicrous. None of this makes sense. And again, I think, you know, you look at Representative Clyburn, for example. What did he say? Let's go ahead and spend first, and then we'll figure out how to pay for it later, which basically means we'll just keep borrowing. This idea of modern monetary theory has got to go, that basically we can just keep borrowing to spend all these social programs.
Now, they're going to raise the income tax on couples quite significantly across the board, and they are also going to raise money on corporations, I think, to 26.5%. All that just goes right through to the consumer, doesn't it, Alfredo?
Oh, yeah, it absolutely does. And remember, those corporate tax rates, we've got about a million small businesses, Hugh, that file as C-Corps. So those are all going to get that increase in tax rate as well, in addition to all those small businesses that will lose that 20% tax deduction, which, again, was so absolutely critical to the success of our economy under Trump.
Let's pause on that for a moment. If you are a subchapter S, you are a limited partnership, you got a 20% deduction under the Trump tax bill. They want to get rid of that. That is going to be, it's an enormous hit on people, Alfredo. Do those folks know that they've got targets on their back?
I don't think they actually understand this, Hugh. I really don't, because, you know, the Democrats are very clever about how they mask things, no pun intended. But they really, really are good about that. For example, these mandates on the vaccines, they talk about these are, for the largest employers of our country. They're talking 100 employees or more. I'm sorry, but the SBA, the Small Business Administration alone, 500 employees or less is a small business. So we're going to be doing this to the majority of our small businesses. And then also on top of that, saying if you don't do it, we're going to fine you $14,000 per employee. They're dishonest, misleading, and disingenuous, Hugh.
I think of the dry cleaners where I got my tuxedo altered last week. I've had the same tuxedo for a long time. I had to take it in. I think about six people work there. I'm quite sure it's a subchapter S, family business, all of them, family business. They're going to lose 20% of their income next year. I doubt they have any idea, Alfredo. How are you getting the word out?
Well, part of it is the bus tour, right? I mean, we started in Bedford, Texas. We went to Jefferson City, Missouri. We went to Rochester, Minnesota. Today, we're actually in Waukesha, Wisconsin. And then we're going to be going to Texas, Georgia, Florida. I mean, this is the way we got to do it, right? And then, of course, spreading the word through, your great show and other shows like yours on the Salem Network. We've got to get this word out because people
Is the bus wrapped like the Larry Elder special in California? Have you got a JCN wrap on the bus?
We sure do. It's a great bus, which basically says stop the war on small business, stop all the mandates, stop the tax increases. But this is truly a war on small business. There hasn't been one single policy, Hugh, that we've found that is actually under the Biden administration that is actually intended to help small businesses. Every single thing that we've seen pretty much will hurt a small business.
Well, I'm looking forward to working with you in Atlanta. On October 13th, Alfredo and I and Brian Westbury will be together at the Atlanta History Center. Go to am920theanswer.com. It's a ticketed event. Most of what Alfredo does is for free, but this is a ticketed event. You have to come in and pay the piper at the door because Brian Westbury is going to walk through the entire economic analysis. Then Alfredo and I will be talking about politics. Head over to am920theanswer.com and then go to jcnbustour.com to find out where Alfredo is going to be. Go sign up, become part of the defense team, part of the secondary to stop, intercept these tax increases, become like the Browns, become like John Johnson III. Get back there and get in the way of these tax hikes. I'll be right back, America. Thank you, Alfredo. Hour number three of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Straight ahead.
Hear the latest reporting and analysis on the big stories of the day on the Daybreak Insider podcast. It's top-notch reporting from SRN News, along with the sharpest insight from Hugh Hewitt, Mike Gallagher, Dennis Prager, Sebastian Gorka, and the voices of townhall.com. The Daybreak Insider podcast. It's your first look at today's top stories. Available at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, and at salempodcastnetwork.com.
Morning, glory, America. Bonjour, hi, California. Hugh Hewitt inside the Beltway, joined from California early on Election Day by Alex Michelson of Fox, L.A., Channel 11. During this election, there have been winners and losers. We're going to talk about them, but one of the big winners is Alex, who has emerged as, I believe, California's preeminent television broadcast, California political reporter. And I think there are three of them. I think there are triplets because he's been everywhere. Good morning, Alex. How are you?
You're way too kind. Good morning to you, Hugh, on a big day in California political.
Yeah, but honestly, I know your GM and your PD. I hope they're paying you overtime. Are they paying you by the mile because you've been everywhere?
You need to renegotiate my contract on my behalf. Next time, you're my agent.
Well, I'm telling you, if I were you, I would have Johnny Cash, I've been everywhere, man. If I had a producer, I'd bring that up right now because you have been everywhere. Where have you reported on during this California recall campaign, Alex?
Well, we've been everywhere. I mean, last night we were with Governor Newsom in Long Beach with President Biden. The day before, I was with the governor and also with Larry Elder, traveling around with him at several different events. I was with Kevin Faulkner yesterday, the former San Diego mayor. I've spent time with Kevin Kiley recently as well. I mean, we've interviewed every single one of the main candidates one-on-one several times. I've been out on the road with all of them, and it's been fascinating to watch it all up close.
Well, I think that I was talking with someone about the election this week. Gavin Newsom successfully has made this a DR election. I don't know if he successfully got enough D's to turn out, but he has successfully made it a DR election. Do you agree with my analysis?
100%. And by every indication, he has more than enough D's to turn out. I mean, remember, this was always a math challenge for people that were trying to recall Governor Newsom. In a state with twice as many Democrats as Republicans. I talked with Gavin Newsom's campaign manager last night, and he admitted to me, he said, look, we were never trying to persuade the other side. That wasn't what this was about. This was simply about turning out our people. And so they've used every single trick that they had to make this about them being a Republican recall, and either you're a Democrat, and if you're a Democrat, you should be with the Democrats. That's part of the reason they brought out Biden and Harris. That's why they called it a Republican recall over and over again. That's why they did everything possible to stop every major Democrat from getting on the ballot as a potential replacement, so that it all became about, do you want Gavin Newsom or do you want Larry Elder? They successfully changed the question, which is, do you think Governor Newsom has done a good job? If that was the question in people's mind, they probably would have lost. But if the question is, do you want Governor Newsom or do you want Larry Elder, and you're a hardcore Democrat who voted against President Trump, you're probably choosing Governor Newsom, even if you don't love it.
Now, this is my interesting take on this as well. Unless Larry pulls off the upset, I think some California squish Republicans will say he hurt the cause because he polarized the race. I believe that national Republicans will be very happy that Larry was the face of the recall because he broadened the appeal of the Republican Party, making a black Republican the face of the West Coast Republican Party. My question to you is, when Kevin Faulkner speaks tonight, will he blame Larry Elder for this going off the rails?
He already has started to. I tweeted out a poll the other day, which was the L.A. Times Berkeley poll, which showed that in July, this thing was a even race. And then now it's a 20-point win for Governor Newsom. And Kevin Faulkner's communications director retweeted my tweet and said, well, what happened in July? Larry Elder entered the race. So that side of the Republican Party has already started to blame Larry Elder. Question for Larry Elder is, will he accept the results of the race? He strongly hinted that he's ready to challenge them in court. He has a whole website set up where people can report potential fraud. And he was asked about 85 times in the last 2 days whether he would accept the results, a la President Trump. And he was suggesting that he would not or would not.
Alex, one of your competitors ran a story on the weekend about El Camino High School and the broken machines there. I believe that story. Has that been replicated anywhere else?
I have not seen that replicated anywhere else. I think we know that there have traditionally always been some irregularities in a state of 40 million people when everybody's trying to vote. We have not, so far, seen widespread evidence of major problems or of major voter fraud.
Yeah, I want people to know, it always happens. I voted in California for you. I'm a Virginian now, and I've been a Virginian for 5 years, but I still get my California ballot, by the way, Alex. I still got a ballot. And that just goes to show why California is so screwed up. But if it's not close, they can't cheat. That's the old saying. If it is close, then it matters. But if it's not close, it doesn't matter. In terms of the number one issue that Gavin Newsom has run on, besides Larry Elder is a Trumpist, what has he defended himself on? I think I saw him yesterday say that the Delta variant was the turning point.
Yes, they have. You know, this whole thing started off about COVID, even though it started technically before COVID, but it really picked up steam because people were frustrated by Governor Newsom's COVID restrictions. Back in June, the governor was trying to run away from COVID restrictions. Say California was roaring back. But with the Delta variant coming in his vaccine mandates and mask mandates, he views as a major political asset. It's the number one thing that he talks about in commercials other than Larry Elder. He talks about Florida and Texas as models of what not to do. He says that those governors drove their states off a COVID cliff. And he talks about if Larry Elder gets in, which he does say, he would get rid of those vaccine mandates and mask mandates. And the governor says people will literally die. He says it's life and death. They have found great success with polls showing that the majority, overwhelming majority of Californians like the vaccine and mask mandates. And it's been a big reason why he's pulled ahead.
Larry Elder raised $18 million. And has a grassroots on fire network. Does that surprise you, Alex Michelson?
No. I mean, I think there's tremendous anger in this state from a significant percentage of voters in this state that were desperate to have a charismatic voice to fight back. There's real anger in this state, not only over COVID restrictions, but also issues like homelessness and EDD fraud and corruption in Sacramento. And there, people were desperate to get behind one person who could articulate those issues in a effective and interesting way. And Larry Elder is a master communicator. He's a very interesting person to talk to. And I think he represented well the anger that a lot of people feel. If he ends up coming up short, he ends up coming up short because of a numbers game of just not enough people in that camp. But he certainly has gotten people fired up in a way that President Trump got people fired up around the country, and that certainly Kevin Faulkner and other more moderate Republicans have not been able to do.
Now, Alex, I got to remind you, I have no idea what's going to happen tomorrow. We're going to talk to you tomorrow. On election night 2016, I was at 30 Rock, NBC, on set with Chuck Todd and Tom Brokaw and Lester Holt and Savannah Guthrie and James Carville. And everybody thought that Kellyanne Conway had basically conceded before it was over. Everybody thought it was in the bag for Hillary Clinton. Everybody thought there was no way Donald Trump could win. And then, in the space of 5 hours, the world turned upside down. Is there a chance that happens tonight in California if people get out and vote this morning for Larry Elder?
There is a chance, which is why people should go vote. What's different now than different about that race in many of those states is millions and millions of ballots are already in. And we do have a feeling, or not a feeling, we have the statistics that show the majority of ballots that have come in so far from Democrats. So the Democrats have built up a pretty significant lead. So there needs to be one of the most tremendous turnout operations in the history of politics today from conservatives and Democrats that are against Governor Newsom to turn out in order to pull this off.
Yeah, people have to vote. If they want a change in California, they have to get out there and vote. Where are you spending the night, Alex Michelson, for Channel 11?
I will be in studio tonight, anchoring our coverage throughout the night. I actually get to go back in the building.
Well, I hope you use some of the highlights of the debate that we co-hosted. That was great fun, Alex, and we'll talk to you tomorrow on the results. Follow Alex at Twitter, ELEX_Michelson, ELEX_Michelson. Alex, thank you, my friend. Great to talk to you.
Thanks for all your coverage throughout as well, Hugh.
Oh, I appreciate it. He's been here early every week since we got into this. And my pal Larry Elder has surged. He's done amazingly well. Can he get the football across the – or is he going to be like Nick Chubb and fumble it? And I love Nick Chubb. I don't know. I hope he's more like Nick Chubb when he scored twice instead of Nick Chubb when he fumbled it. We will see. Larry Elder tomorrow. I'll tell you about it when we return to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Stay with us.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.